Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Welcome to this abbreviated but nonetheless powerful After Hours. My guest for this entire hour is I just met her, but we have a lot of friends in common, and I'm a huge admirer of her work, especially her work that is between the covers of a book called The Salt Shed. Her name is Sandra, sometimes Sandy, Steinbrecher. She's a photographer. Okay, dear, when did you get the photography bug?
I got the bug, I think I was about 25 years old.
Really?
Yes.
Where are you from?
Well, I grew up in Hyde Park, Chicago, South Side, went to Kenwood High School.
Okay.
And I went to University of Illinois, and I studied foreign languages there, mostly Italian, Spanish, and French.
With the notion in college of doing what?
I had no idea.
Good.
I just knew that I loved languages, and I was pretty good at them. I just kind of had a love of travel and languages.
What did your parents do?
My mom was an executive secretary. My dad was in, I'll say, the accounting business, but, you know, that's pretty much...
Makes it sound like he was a bookie or something.
Well, kind of close, but not really.
What was...
He was, really what I want to say about my dad is that he was kind of brilliant. He went to the University of Chicago.
As did my dad, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, and he graduated very quickly in an accelerated fashion and was studied physics. And
wow.
So he did that for a while, but for some reason I never really got the story, didn't really make it in physics. So he, you know, was great at math and went into some other kinds of...
Well, interesting. If you'd stayed in physics, he would have been another Nobel Prize winner at the University of Chicago.
Right,
maybe.
If he had maybe stuck with academics. But, you know, that was just the... Kind of growing up in Hyde Park, probably you have heard this from other people, but the kind of community it was, you know, had a sort of some kind of social conscience, and it was just such a very tight community in that sense.
Yeah.
And I loved growing up there, and I loved going to Kenwood High School. And
what about the arts? What about the arts and the creative side, which is also a real river in Hyde Park, too?
Yeah.
Was your family artistic?
Well, my father, again, had a deep love of music and audio equipment, and he always had music in the house. So, and they were both lovers of culture.
Yeah.
So they didn't create themselves that I know of, although I think my dad dabbled in writing.
But they also had created that kind of environment. Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, and I have a brother and a sister, and we all grew up, you know, in that kind of music, arts, a little bit of travel kind of environment.
What do they do?
They're both retired, actually. Or I think my brother is still in IT work.
Okay.
And then my sister was a scientist. She worked in genetics for... her whole career.
Okay, so you're studying languages at the University of Illinois, and you're thinking of using that study to travel the world, to work for the United Nations, to work for the Peace Corps. When you got out of college, let me put it this way, Sandra. When you got out of college and you said, well, I need a job, what did you pursue?
Well, I've always figured out ways to travel. In fact, my advisor at U of I said, I think you majored in getting out of here. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I worked as a waitress and a bartender, which, by the way, really serves you well in life.
In Chicago?
Yep.
Where?
Mm-hmm. I worked at, one year I worked at the Claim Company, which
remember
was
over it?
On
I remember
Clark
it.
Street.
Yeah, you're talking to someone older than you, and there, you
I
can't
love it.
Mention anything places
that you
I don't
know.
Yeah, right.
I also worked at a place called the Blue Mesa.
Remember that incredible run by the Marienthal brothers?
I probably served you a margarita. I hope I was nice by then. I might have been getting...
No, the Marienthal brothers, who, you know, famously the sons of the people who own Mr. Kelly's and have made this Mr. Kelly's documentary.
Yes.
Everything That's a wonderful thing about Chicago. All of these things do eventually tie together. And you were just, that's a good profession, waitressing and bartending.
Yeah, I think it afforded me a way of just, because, you know, making a living and while I was figuring things out. And so around 25, I got the photography bug.
How? I'll tell you a quick story.
Victor
Skrebneski, who became a very famous photographer here.
Yes, I know his work.
He's now dead, and I want to believe the story he told about being a 12-year-old boy finding a camera, a Brownie camera, in the rain at Lakeshore Park, giving it to the people in the park, and they said, if no one comes to get this, you can have this. That's how Victor claims to have started.
It's a good story.
It is a good story, so I want to believe it. So you decided on photography Howard.
Yeah, it kind of came to me, and I thought, get a camera. Just get a camera. And I did. And I had a friend at the time who knew how to process film and make a print. And he had a little darkroom set up in his bathroom, the way we all did, uh-huh. You know, the way so many photographers started. And I kind of cobbled together a little portfolio. And then I took it over to UIC, where they had a really good photography department. And I kind of got myself into the advanced photo classes.
Wow.
Because I didn't want to necessarily get another bachelor's degree.
You were intrigued by, you know, the sort of mechanics of making pictures.
Yes. I got this, the camera was a Nikon Niker Matte, and it was the loveliest little camera, which was stolen later, and I'm still sad about that
camera. Wow, yeah.
But that got me going, and then I learned about printing and processing and, you know, getting critiqued.
Were you shooting all the time, too?
I was, actually. But, I mean, it was all pretty rudimentary, but I can see that the threads of what I like to do now were there. I just didn't really know how to do it all.
But it also, I think it's a really interesting thing how you might have started to get consumed by photography. I think if you had, for instance, it was today and a young girl who was 25 started shooting pictures with an iPhone, it might not have blossomed into a photography career that the manifestation of which I'm holding in my hand called the Salt Jet. We got to take a little commercial break and we'll continue on with Sandra Steinbrecher after this. We were talking, and we've gotten Sandra Steinbrecher out of the University of Illinois, and you're starting to take pictures, but you're also on the sort of real technical end, is the printing end, which now, I mean, that basic, I mean, I know it still exists, but that was the way in which, the only way photos were made.
It was.
What intrigued you about it? Because I always thought there was something, not knowing much or anything about photography, there was something magical, or there's alchemy involved in it.
I was just going to use that word, magical. The mystery and the magic, which is also part of photography. There's, you know, because you bring to photography what you know and your techniques and your eye, but there's things that happen that you're not always even aware of in the moment that you don't see till later when you look at that image, which is just the mystery. And also, I think the magic, and also, as my colleague and mentor Ron Gordon said, you also leave room for the viewer to bring their own response to your work.
So I think that's
which was
so
brilliant.
It's brilliant, and it really, really is germane to this book, Salt Shed. Tell us about Ron Gordon. He was beyond influential.
Ron Gordon is a terrific, talented architectural and preservation photographer, but also a master printer, and he had a small business up in the Rowe Building above Sam Meyer's bookstore.
Which is, you were just down there at the whole Printers Row Lit Fest.
I was just at Printers Row Lit Fest, and I was at Center Stage, which happened to be
right there,
next door to where I began my, I think it's where I began my career, because I met Ron in 1989 and started printing and processing film there. It was a beautiful studio. It was, you know, they had taken. I think Harry Weiss was in that building,
sure,
too. And
yeah,
they had
great architect,
taken it
yeah.
in the 70s and created some of the first live work spaces ever in the city.
Now, Harry was like that. He was one of Chicago's great, if sort of unrecognized geniuses.
I agree.
When did you, you refer to yourself as a sort of documentary photojournalist, if not journalist, a documentary photographer. What was your first project that went beyond you and Ron's dark rooms?
That was, I started working with Chicago Public Schools.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say I didn't start like at the top in terms of in the administration.
And that's probably for the best, frankly.
Yeah, and I don't think it even is very possible to do
yeah.
it that way.
Yeah.
Although I do know a couple of people who have. But I started because I met a principal where my son, Aaron, was going to high school, Jones High School. And I had done some pictures of him, and he said, hey, would you think about doing a little bit like a Life of Jones kind of project? And I said, yes.
He suggested that, or the principal suggested that?
The principal suggested,
that's
not my teenage son.
That's fabulous. And yeah. you of course, jumped at it.
And it was terrific. And then he went into a different position to do some work in education reform in other schools and asked me to, so my very first project was to sort of create photo diaries of and record education programs and reform and students and teachers and staff at Harper High School.
Wow.
Which
tough
just
school.
Recently, a few years ago, closed.
Yeah.
And I was very sad
yeah.
about that.
Yeah.
They worked really hard over there.
Yeah, they just lost more and more students. That was the problem. You know, it's like a ghost town down there.
Right. So that was my first foray into, you know, documentary work.
What was your first foray into documentary work that you might have gotten paid a living wage for? That the arm that you went in, I mean, I know a lot, we both know a lot of photographers, and
yeah.
they're very, you know, Skrubnesky, we just talked about, was a very successful commercial photographer.
Yes, and usually you have to have those other projects to help you.
Of course,
do.
Of course.
So I did have other jobs, but I would say in the schools, they managed to cobble together grants that they had, that they could pull a little money from here and a little there. So I was able to manage working on those projects, and I'm grateful for that support because I did really love working in schools. I saw so much positive energy and so many great things, great work being done by all kinds of people, from security guards to staff to, you know, teachers and principals, people who really care about the outcome of students.
And the other thing about it, so much of that work goes absolutely unrecognized, except perhaps for the two parents who are grateful to this one teacher. It's a weird,
absolutely
altruistic world that nobody knows about.
No, they don't know, and they don't, the people doing the work don't really, they can't possibly be doing it for reward or, you know, accolades or anything.
So one of your son goes to Jones, right? You had two sons.
Mm-hmm.
You were married.
Yep.
Your husband is no longer alive.
Correct.
Who was he?
Tom Steinbrecher.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great guy.
Beyond being supportive of your career. Beyond being supportive.
He was an architect.
He was.
Yeah.
And how did you meet?
Well, through the Blue Mesa, because I was doing photography at UIC, and I had a 4x5 camera that I had to store. Okay, so I was doing a project. Remember the old Sam's Liquors?
Sure.
It was empty and abandoned. And I guess that was probably 87 or 88.
Yeah, at the corner of North and,
yeah.
Halstead. Yeah.
And I went in and did some photography in there.
Wow, how interesting.
Which is sort of my why I look back and I think, oh, yeah. And I was very interested in the story of that building. Tom, my late husband, was working actually for the Marienthal brothers on a freelance architectural project.
Wow.
And that's how we met.
What a small, small world. And he was, I would have to believe, I don't know anything about him other than what you've just told me. I have to believe he was very, very supportive of your work.
I'd say he was probably my biggest fan.
Yeah.
And I tell you, he was, would have been thrilled, not just about the book, but just me being on the construction site.
See, one of the things, and we'll talk about this after the news at the bottom of the hour, we could talk for hours about it, and I'm going to write about Sandra Steinbrecher in a couple weeks in the paper, and we'll get a little deeper into this, but the narrative in this book really tells the story, and it really tells it with a very, very few words, most from people I know. But with the photos, and I think you shouldn't, I hope you take that as a huge compliment.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're going into something sort of blind, and let's get into it now. How did this come to be? You write a bit about it in the book, but not enough for me.
Well, I had a chance to walk on the site. And
how did you get that chance?
Okay, so back to U of I, one of my friends from U of I back in the day was Craig Golden. Mm-hmm. And I have to give him huge props because I said, when I found out that they were going to restore it and turn it into a music venue, I asked him if I could just go behind.
I remember when that news broke, and mm-hmm. did you think at one point, well, oh no, they're just going to tear it down and build some, you know, idiotic outdoor stadium? Were you worried about it?
Yes, and I think that it could have been torn down very easily. I did address that
in one
of the chapters about how hard this one development team had to work to, you know, come up with a complex kind of agreement and plan for saving the building and making it viable. I think they knew that a music venue or entertainment venue could be the way to go. And certainly Craig and his partner Bruce had had the vision for that. But I walked through, Rick, and I got to tell you, I was sort of hooked almost immediately, but I would say it's one of my first days. I kind of had a first of all, I knew as a documentary photographer that this would be a really exciting visual story, and it seemed momentous to me when I heard that the original roof panels with the sign were going to come down. And I thought, I've got to be here to document that.
It's fascinating because you thought it would be interesting and wonderful and even entertaining to people, but you could not have ever imagined how much work it would be. We will be back after the news. I am holding in my hands, ladies and gentlemen, a book that everybody who gives a whit about Chicago should have. It's a brilliant Chicago book. There are some of you, perhaps, who lived on the South Side and never drove the Kennedy Expressway. So you don't know what you're going, what, salt shed, what. It was a famous landmark because it had a cute little girl with an umbrella. It is now a fantastic music venue. It is, in its way, don't you think, Sandra Steinbrecher, the story of Chicago is the story of Salt Shed.
I have to agree with you. I thought the same thing when I was
invited to walk around.
Well, over the years, too. I mean, I have said to people, not a day has gone by in 3 years I haven't thought about this.
Sure.
In some way, whether it's been the photos and capturing or editing or how to tell the story. But it does. It represents our, you know, it's a big part of our city's economic and industrial growth, you know, when lumber and industries and meatpacking and salt and, you know, was everything to Chicago.
Yeah.
And also our sort of the double edge we have here. We're a very working class city, but we also have this great architecture. The Salt Shed sort of puts all that together.
Yes, and we also have this great tradition of tearing down great architecture. There's
right,
no question
about
that.
Which is why this book is such a happy
celebration. You know, I don't want to get too much into the guys who run and save the place, but they were very when you said, when you decided, well, I need to, probably was a little more complicated than this, said, I need to save this. I need to catalog and capture this rebirth. In whatever way you did say that, who did you approach and what did they say to that?
Well, I kind of started going there. You know, I had permission, I had insurance, and then I never left. I just kind of kept coming back. And, of course, I had full permission. But, you know, there's so many things going on a construction site.
Oh, my God.
That, you know, they're not really thinking, oh, we need a photographer here to document this. They're concerned about the timing and the schedule and the money and that, you know, everything. Everybody stays safe. And, you know, it was a very safe site.
Did you feel like you were intruding on the rebirth?
No.
Okay.
Because as a documentarian, you're not really supposed to interfere. So, you know, I have gotten pretty good at becoming invisible. Mm-hmm. So once mm-hmm. I had permission and once workers kept seeing me. And
right.
They knew I wasn't from OSHA or something to bust anybody.
Some union, yeah.
That I was there for. It was a union job, and I learned a lot about that, mm-hmm. too. It was not that hard to move around. And frankly, they started sharing once I started asking questions.
Yeah.
And, you know, these, you know, workers and tradespeople were not always used to. Actually, they weren't used to having someone ask them about their work at all.
See, that's another element of this thing. It reminds me because there's this someone who's just a wonderful guy named Mark Larson has just done a new edition of, not a new edition, but sort of based on Studs Terkel's famous book, Working. And that's why some of the voices here, there's a plumbing foreman talking. I'll just say one sentence. He says, imagine that we've been on this planet for the equivalent of one breath. And then he says a few other things here. Because most of the people in these kind of jobs don't get asked about their job.
Absolutely. And it's very invisible work, Rick. It's,
no question.
You know, we go into the beautifully restored salt shed and it's gorgeous and the sound is beautiful. We're not really thinking that Danny, the plumbing foreman, you know, brought is the reason why we have hot water and bathrooms
yeah.
and the, you know, 10 miles or so of electrical conduit that had to be placed for all the equipment to be able to run properly. And so yeah, it was the kind of place where you could delve into these stories that really pull the history of Chicago together.
When did you say to yourself, when did you think that this might be, there are a variety of things you could have done with this. You could have had an exhibition somewhere. When did it occur to you that it is fitting and would be fitting? And I got to tell you, people, it is a gorgeous, on the surface, if you don't know anything about photography or anything, it's a beautiful book. And it tells a story in photograph. When did you think it might be something that should be between covers?
Well, it wasn't really for quite a while, maybe 8 months or so.
How often, Sandy, were you shooting?
I was essentially embedded. I didn't go every day, but I went maybe 3 to 4 times a week.
Wow.
Which is a lot. I was doing other projects at the same time. But I could go early in the morning because that's when construction starts.
But you also seem to have a sunrise fixation, if that's the right way to put it.
It is. I love sunrise. And the way the light looked rising, coming up over the river and hitting that rusted steel frame, and it was just gorgeous, oranges and reds. And you see a lot of those in the book, I think.
Well, you did. Right. I mean, there's a section on winter in here. There's a section I love the section on section number 4 about people. It is just, it's a wonderful narrative. Do you have any idea how many photos you took?
Oh, yes, I do.
Well, that's remarkable. Tens of thousands.
I think around 100,000 photos.
Wow.
And there are 133 in the book.
And when you just.
And now, you know, 100,000 doesn't mean. But there were a lot that I had to that broke my heart not to have in the book, too.
Did you edit them yourself?
Yes.
That's pretty amazing, I think.
I edited everyone myself, and then I created an edit that I could, which actually Rich Cahan, our mutual friend, I kind of looked over for
great,
me.
Great photo editor.
Great photo editor, great encourager and supporter. And he's actually the one that kind of said, you know, you might have something here.
See, Rich would know because he and his buddy Michael Williams have published some astonishing photo books. I mean, if I had, you know, photos of my daughter or something, then I'd go to Rich and say, can I make a book out of this? And I'm serious. I would go there like a dumbbell and go, can I make a book out of this? And he'd say, sure, Rick, here's what you do. Get rid of these pictures and do this and do that.
Yeah,
he really
editor.
Is incredibly
Both
knowledgeable and very nurturing, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm curious. They have done books themselves through City Files Press.
Right.
Did they not say, hey, we'll do this for you?
Well, they said, you know, we could publish this book for you. But then they introduced me to Sam Landers over at Trope, which produced, designed and laid out and you know, printed this book. It's really, they did a beautiful job.
Oh. And well, and they also, because you also got some foundation help with this.
I did.
They have kept the price of this book to $45, which to my mind is one of the great bargains I've ever encountered. This photograph, even the photograph on the back, I would pay $45 for that photo. What was it like working with them? I know those guys. They were on the radio a long time ago, and they're local, and they do incredible work. What was it like working with them?
It was great. They agreed. Sam agreed to be my publisher, and then I do want to shout out the Richard H. Driehaus Foundation.
Oh, sure.
Which awarded this work a grant. So
was
that
it Ward Miller? Does Ward the guy in charge of that these days?
No, he's Preservation Chicago.
Yeah, he has a piece and he has a short.
Yeah, he has a quote in the.
You're very wise, too, Sandra, to not have. It is a photograph book, ladies and gentlemen. There are some words in here, some written by dear friends of mine, including Heidi Stevens, and you met Heidi through a story she did about. And the fascinating story about three kids who you track down.
Yes.
That's another hour on the radio. and some of the people, and Paul DeRica from the Chicago History Museum.
Right. And then the young musician who's very talented, Seema Cunningham.
Right,
wrote the afterword about growing up in the music community in Chicago and what some of these industrial kind of spaces mean to them. And I thought it was a lovely and fitting way of...
It
you
is.
Know, bringing the future of this space, the present and future, into the book, which I really didn't want it to be all about the past.
There are, too, some amazing concert shots in here. We got to take one last little break, and then we'll come back, and then Sandra Steinbrecher and I will tell you where to get this book, where and when to buy it. This is a great, you know, I know some of you, you may live in Arizona now, for all I know, but you were driven down the expressway and go, look at that little lady, look at the little Morton Salt girl. It would be a fantastic surprise gift for someone to find out what has happened to that little girl and that salt shed. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back. We have just a few more minutes with Sandra, I now call her Sandy, Steinbrecher, who is the author, and I'm using that word broadly because she has taken the 100-some photographs. Do you know exactly how many photographs in
133.
She does, doesn't she? Unbelievable. It is one of the best books I've seen in as long as I can remember. It's called The Salt Shed, and it captures the life and rebirth and ongoing vitality of a place that sits near the Chicago River and sits near the Kennedy Expressway. And now there are a bunch of kids, some, going to concerts there who have no idea. And it would behoove all of their parents, if they hear one of their kids in from college, where are you going? I'm going to the salt shed. And instead of them saying to you, I bet you never heard of that, you should reach behind your couch and give them a copy of this book and say, you need to know the history of this book, of this place. That's one of the great values of it.
Yeah, it is a way of keeping the stories alive and very vibrant because of this new use. So it was built for, you know, the production and processing of salt, and now it's a place where people come together for community.
It's community, yeah.
And for the arts and culture, music, and it's, you know, there are sold-out shows, and people of, actually of all ages, but I would say one of the main goals for my book is to help make historic preservation come alive for, you know, future generations, for us, for whoever, but just to understand that it's possible and it's a living, breathing thing.
I think Blair, somewhere in here, compares it to Saving Northerly Island or New York's High Line, which is really one of the great examples of repurposing something. Where can people get this, Sandy? What's the easiest way? It's not formally published until the 17th.
Right. Official publishing date is the 17th. It will be in some stores and shops then. Until then, and at any time, you can get it online at trope.com.
T-R-O-P-E.
Also, it would be available at bookshop.org, which is a nice organization that also donates money.
And it'll be available in what bookstores remain here, independent bookstores like
Volumes. Yes, I think it'll be at the Bookseller and Slant of Light Books, the new one on Wells Street, and Unabridged. I'm pretty sure it'll be in some of the museum shops.
Oh, that's great.
Chicago Architecture Center, where I'll be doing a program in December, which is going to be great.
Now you can
December 10th.
You know, I'm not going to spell Sandra's name for you. I want you to Google Salt Shed and Sandra, and that will, I guarantee you, that will lead them to your site. Will
that
it not?
Should, yeah.
Yeah, it's better because you're sitting there, you're probably all half drunk because of the Bears victory and dreaming your Super Bowl dreams. You Google Salt Shed Photography will get it.
I hope
you see what an internet,
internet
caveman I am. Salt Shed, yes, photography.
Yes, and also the Salt Shed book at barnesandnoble.com. So pretty much everywhere you get books.
It is beautiful. It's one way for you people who are our age to totally impress your kids who are going to concerts at the Salt Shed. And would that not impress? Yeah, I think if my daughter Fiona is 20, she'll be back from college soon. I'll go, hey.
Yeah.
Go to and give her a book and like a couple tickets or something.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. She would love that.
What have you heard so far?
I just want to say also I'm doing a lot on social media these days for the book and for events that I'm doing, like being at Printers Row Lit Fest, talking with you.
You know what I'll do? I'll have Jack Heinrich, the legendary producer of this show, put Sandra's
Instagram
website.
Yeah,
I haven't put all that stuff. I know he's capable of it. I am incapable of it, but I want people to go to this book. The thing about it, Sandy, is if people see it, they'll buy it.
Yeah.
And there's no question about that. I don't know if they'll be drawn to this. I think that, they will get the Salt Shed life and its history, and it's between the covers of this book, it seems to me like a living thing.
That's a great way to put it, Rick.
Well,
thank you.
So you say. It is an absolute pleasure to know you, and I'm going to call Rich Cahan and tell him he did good work by getting you to Trope, and you were so nice. You really thank a lot of people in this thing, and this is a project. How often have you been there recently?
I shot for 2 years, then mostly worked on the book for a year. It's been exactly 3 years since I started the project.
When you say started the project, what does that mean?
I first walked in on like a September 1st, 2021. And that's when I first walked through, and a few days later went back, and then, you know, had a big moment standing under the vast steel shed. And knew that I was going to continue.
Are there any plans for an exhibition?
That's really
what I'd love to see. You can't say anything about it.
Right. I'm interested, and let's just say I'm definitely pursuing an exhibition.
Good.
I would love to see the prints and some of the audio that, you know, I recorded conversations with tradespeople and with, you know, all the people I interviewed. So it'd be fun to have some audio in there. And I, my background is in printing, so I would love to see a print exhibition. So, yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, your Christmas shopping is accomplished, and it's only September. Sandy, thanks. It's great to meet you. Really great to meet you, and I'll keep promoting this book like crazy.
Thanks so much, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You were great. You were, Krista Flores can vouch for what a great guest you were. We don't have that many. Some are like, oh, what? It's a book.